In the summer of 1982, I discovered Paris for the first time. I was on a high school graduation adventure with my boarding school roommate, Maria, and her sister, Joanna. We bought Eurail passes and spent 2 months traveling around France, Italy, Germany, and Czechoslovakia. We arrived in Paris on a hot June morning, bunked in a youth hostel on the Rue des Bars behind the Hôtel de Ville, and made a beeline for Bertillon, the ice cream parlor on the Île Saint-Louis that Joanna's worldly older boyfriend had told her had the best ice cream in the world. It was true. I still remember the intense flavor of the side-by-side scoops of raspberry and lemon-lime sorbet. Everything about Paris was more intense, from the sorbet flavors to the cornflower blue sky stretched over the sharp spire of Sainte-Chapelle, to the scarlet poppies poking out of green grass squares in the Luxembourg Gardens, to the acrid smell of urine in the long, white-tiled metro corridors. For 2 weeks, we walked and walked, restlessly roaming from right bank to left, through lush displays of dahlias and roses in the Île de la Cité flower market, past the stout, gothic turrets of the Conciergerie, and over the Pont Neuf to the Boulevard Saint-Michel. We walked from the Jardin des Plantes to the Eiffel Tower, and then crossed the Seine again on the Pont de l'Alma, taking in the golden shadows of Paris at dusk. Every streetscape and boulevard seemed to shimmer in the heat and summer light like an impressionist tableau. We visited the Louvre, Notre Dame, and Sacré-Cœur. We rolled down the grassy hillside of the Parc des Buttes-Chaumont and ate buttered baguettes with thick slabs of boiled ham. In the evening, we counted our chunky 10-franc coins and splurged on steak au poivre and cheap Beaujolais at Au Charpentier. Something about the majestic landscape moved me in ways I didn't quite understand. The shock of history. Everywhere I looked, the past was present. On the sides of the limestone buildings, brass plaques memorialized fallen soldiers and members of the French Resistance. The parks, the broad, slick paving stones on the boulevards, even the light had been immortalized by the Impressionist painters. So much texture and flavor. 20 kinds of bread were splayed out in bakery windows. Boisterous cafes spilled over with students, professors, prostitutes, and ouvriers, workers in their cobalt blue jumpsuits. When the summer ended, I headed off for my freshman year at Princeton, and was immersed in an all-American preppy campus that was a world apart from the bohemian Paris that had moved me to my soul. Within a few weeks, I fell in love with a sophomore named Will, who, like me, had grown up in the prep school tradition of the East Coast. Will was confident about his place at Princeton, not intimidated by ambitious classmates or the grind for grades. He laughed at me for trying to read every book on every syllabus, for rushing over to Firestone Library after dinner. On weekends, we'd go to drunken parties in the basements of eating clubs like Cap and Gown or the Tiger Inn, where masses of people would dance to one-hit wonders. "Everybody wants to rule the world," we sang along, punching the air with our hands and skidding around the beer-soaked tile floor in our acid-washed jeans and Laura Ashley blouses. Yeah, we were going to rule the world, at least until 2 a.m., when many of the party animals were vomiting in the gutter. I was interested in fashion, and that made me a bit of an anomaly on campus. Style was part of my upbringing. New York in the 70s was defined by larger-than-life style icons like Bianca Jagger, Halston, Diane von Furstenberg, and Andy Warhol. My mother and father had divorced when I was 6. I was never sure why exactly. We didn't talk about it. But I remember a kid pointing at me in the second grade and whispering to her friend, "Her parents are divorced."